Yes, Kevin Acey, Ryan Finley, but I'm driving. It was a very late night. Padres, Dodgers. Ryan, I don't think there's any question as to where, but you're the boss, so where would you like to start?
Kevin, what the hell happened last night?
Well, I guess you know how we always say, oh, there's always something when the Padres and Dodgers play. Well, in this series, there was. And, you know, I don't know that this particular thing, the benches clearing, the two managers going at each other, I don't know if that was, you know, predictable or unavoidable, but it kind of was with all the hit batters, and especially from the Padres side, Fernando Tatis Jr. The bottom line, we can parse through a lot of stuff, but we'll circle back to this, is the bottom line, the Padres do not appreciate how the Dodgers are pitching to Fernando Tatis Jr., and more specifically, not just how they're pitching, but then according to the Dodgers, it would simply be, you know, just not executing and accidentally hitting Fernando Tatis Jr. three times in the past six games. And not only that, but like they hit him in the hand. Mm-hmm. And you got to be better than that. I happen to believe the Padres intentionally hit Shohei Ohtani twice. Mm-hmm. And hey, one of them did go up and in, but it really didn't get him. It got him in the shoulder. And the other got him in the leg. And those are, you know, well-executed intentional pitches. Yeah, that's what happened. The bad blood in this instance, and I believe there's bad blood and they're looking for it anyway. The bad blood in this instance came out because Fernando Tatis Jr. has been hit five times in the last 17 games he's played against the Dodgers, and that's three times in the last six games.
Right. And that's where all this really started last night. You know, the Padres and Dodgers have been, for lack of a better term, brushing each other back and barking at each other for the first three games of the series. Heading into game four here, you know, we get to late last night. They throw inside on Fernando Tatis, hit him in the hand as Mike Schilt runs out to the field to check on Tatis, says something to Dave Roberts. And next thing you know, Dave Roberts is bumping Mike Schilt, benches are clearing. And I mean, it was a good, what, Kevin, 10, 12 minutes before everybody sort of calmed down. I've seen Dave Roberts now bump into, push, however we want to say, two of the last four Padres managers. He also did something similar to Andy Green when Andy Green was here. What are we to make of Dave Roberts' involvement last night? And it, to me, it seemed like he was going over the line a little bit, but maybe I'm looking at that through brown and gold colored glasses here. What do we make of his involvement, and what do we think is coming down for both Schilt and Dave Roberts today?
Let's be honest that all of us, even if you're impartial, but you, say, spend all of your time covering the Padres, or you spend all your time covering the Dodgers, or whatever team that you spend all your time covering, and certainly if you're a fan, you're going to, some extent, see it through the lens of your team, whatever that means, your team, right? So let's just acknowledge that. That's just fact, all right? Let's just also acknowledge, I'd like to, and you know me, that I'm always going to go straight to how do I put this in perspective and what's the context and how can I err on the side of not going overboard one way or the other? And that's this. You got to say that it's this craziness, these weird things that Dave Roberts does, they're kind of working for him and his team. And I believe that it's the job, in part of the job description of a big market manager, is to be a lightning rod to some extent, to take it off of your team. And Dave Roberts has done it expertly in this rivalry recently. Also, he's probably a little bit of a hothead you know, maybe wishes he was still playing. Because here's the thing, and I said it, that you're going to have the perspective of the team you cover, and certainly for fans, the team you root for. I struggle to see what Mike Schilt did wrong last night. Like, yeah, in terms of instigating that. He knew he was going to instigate and Roberts was going to come out at him. He was yelling they were yelling when Bryce Johnson got hit. They were yelling. Mike was yelling from the second he was thinking about coming out of the dugout when Tatis got hit. But like, Dave Roberts ran out and bumped into Mike Schilt, right?
Yep. John Boy will have a day with this, I'm sure. I mean, he was mouthing stuff like, you know, after the game, you know what? And look, I know we've seen this before, and this is just kind of talk here, but man, you know, Dave Roberts has the luxury of managing the best team money can buy, best player, I would argue, in the last 50 years, and all of these other things. And yet he's the guy who, to me, constantly seems to be stirring the pot, trying to come up with some sort of an edge for his team, as if simply being the best and the richest, and in many cases, the smartest, isn't enough. I mean, that's the thing about Dave Roberts here. You know, and it looks like we've lost Kevin, at least temporarily here. But, you know, the thing with Dave Roberts is, you know, you look all the way going back. Kevin, you there?
Yeah, I'm here. You guys got me?
Yeah, I got you. I got you. We're talking about Dave Roberts still.
I apologize. When you're driving, doing the podcast, and you get a call on the other line, see, this is the first time it's happened for me. Evidently, you get disconnected from.
You do.
Your, you know, from your podcast. I believe this is a method to his madness. I do. I'm not saying you shouldn't, not you, Padres fans shouldn't hate him. I'm not saying that at all. I'm saying I don't believe a lot of this is real. I believe he manages a team that has 5 traveling beat writers, 10 traveling Japanese writers, videographers, a full-time radio guy on the road, a $380 or $330 million a year TV contract, constantly, you know, on, you know, the national media interest, has 3 future Hall of Famers atop his lineup, has international superstars. I just don't believe a lot of this is real. Now, again, you are perfectly within your rights. Some of it is irritating. I thought both of his ejections this time were a little too much. Too much Dave this series.
Right. There was. And, you know, contrast that, I guess, to Shohei Ohtani. And, you know, you made a note in today's Padres Daily newsletter that I agreed with, that I was saying in real time yesterday. The person who came off looking the best in all this is Shohei Ohtani, who stood on first joking with Jake Cronenworth, walked over to the Padres dugout and said something that it does not appear was received poorly by the Padres. A guy who seems not only to be supremely talented, but pretty unflappable, maybe even a little understanding of the way baseball works. When he got hit the last time, he was waving off, I don't know if that was his teammates or the trainer or whoever it was as he was running to first base, very much dismissed, like, no, 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 and walked to first base, right? I thought he has come off really as the one guy, at least in the home dugout, who doesn't lose his mind, which is impressive.
I'm sure I'm wrong, but that there are Padres fans that don't like Shohei Ohtani because he plays for the Dodgers, and that's fine. But he's a difficult guy to not like. First off, very talented, wonderful to watch. And then, yes, I don't know. I thought he was waving off the trainer because there's some other clues there, like that when he got to first and he said something to the first base coach who was asking if he was okay. Like, it just seemed to, but hey, everyone's going to go ahead and it seems to have just taken it that that he was waving off his teammates. That's cool. And maybe he was, so maybe I'm wrong. But then the whole thing with the Padres dugout, look, the first time he got hit 2 nights ago by Randy Vasquez, it was, he clearly knew that it was on purpose, and he was totally cool about it. Like, he's like, I got to wear this. I'm Shohei Ohtani, you know? And that's just kind of the way it's been for over a century in this game. And, I think the Padres appreciate it too.
Yeah, he can put some ice on those ribs or on his back while sleeping at night on a pile of cash. Because he makes $70 million a year. And I think that when you're sort of the focal point of a team's offense, I think a lot of times when teams are looking to hit you, you're the guy, right? I think the difference between Ohtani and Tatis here might just be where they got hit. You know, Ohtani got hit in the side and then in the back, meteor areas. Tatis got hit in a very small bone in his hand, and we're still not sure if it's broken or not. What's the latest there?
I don't know. We'll see. Today, I imagine it could be in a matter of minutes. So I apologize when this error, you know, is, you guys are listening and we already know. But the bottom line doesn't change. He got hit in an area and it could be really bad. He could miss a day. He could miss a two. Could miss 2 months. not sure exactly what Manny Machado meant. What's going to happen if the Dodgers prayers, because by the way, Manny Machado suggested that they better pray, and he said it enough times that it clearly had an implied threat to it. And Dave Roberts did say that he was going to pray that Tatis was okay. So not sure exactly what the Padres are going to do if Tatis is not okay. That is the difference, Ryan. That was your original point there. Anybody who's watched baseball knows what that unwritten rule is all about. You're not trying to hurt someone.
Right. You're trying
not
to make a point.
Not that this kid was. Not that Jack Little was, or that any Dodgers pitcher was. But that's the point that the Padres are making. Now we've reached an area where intent does not matter when it happens this often and it happens where it happened.
Well, if their strategy is to throw up and in, then there have to be consequences when somebody gets hit or hurt there. Yeah. I think, Kevin, I want some of your insight on this. The real down part about this scuffle towards the end of last night's game is we're not talking enough about what Dave Roberts did in the eighth inning. Now, Dave Roberts, late in last night's game, decides to pull Mookie Betts and Freddie Freeman from the lineup for Rojas and Dalton Rushing. Right. Oh, and I'm sorry. He also pulled Will Smith. So he pulled three of the team's four best players. And sure enough, there's a rally in the ninth inning, and Dalton Rushing comes up with eventually the tying run on second base. This is Will Smith's spot in the order, and they've got a rookie up there facing Yuki Matsui. You said it earlier in this episode. Dave Roberts does some weird stuff. Whether it's quitting in the sixth inning to let Kike Hernandez pitch, pulling his guys in a five-run game against a bullpen that's really been struggling lately. What did you make of all of that? And was there any sort of real-time questioning of what Dave Roberts did last night?
The Padres thought it was curious. I did. I was blown away. I mean, you got to understand also, I'm writing, and I'm like, all right, well, this is something I'll ask about, but it's a secondary issue because it's the eighth inning. Those guys pinch hit. They're not coming up in the ninth. They're just not. Like, they're the 7, 8, 9 batters in the ninth inning. And sure enough, they came up. But, I mean, he also knows he's not running his higher leverage relievers out. Right. I mean, what the Dodgers are doing is amazing. Yoshinobu Yamamoto was the only starting pitcher to face the Padres in a 4-game series. And the Dodgers won all three of their essentially bullpen games, even though one was taken up by two bolt guys. Like, those are not starters it's just unbelievable. So the reality is, and I did talk to someone last night, like, this is the Dodgers do this more than we're aware because we don't follow them every day. They punt more this year than most teams do because of the situation with the pitching. And down 5-0, he thought, in the eighth inning with the Padres having their guys available, was what he needed to do, because I didn't look ahead, but I guarantee you he has another bullpen game coming up in a couple days. So I honestly didn't think it was that big a deal. Certainly curious, but not a big deal when you see what they are able to do and what he has been able to do with their pitching situation, which is now, look, no other team would be able to, because no other team would have been able to invest in their bullpen and the depth that the Dodgers have. Any other team would be the Rockies at this point. So he's got a lot of tools to work with. But I got to give Dave Roberts, their front office, Mark Pryor, I got to give them a lot of credit for what they're doing with no starting pitching, basically.
They are so relentless offensively.
Yes.
I guess maybe I was just surprised that the Dodgers didn't think they could overcome a 5-run deficit against the Padres bullpen in 2 at bats. That's what surprised me, I guess. Because you watching the game, Kevin, when it was 5-0,
what he has to do after that is put his relievers in.
Right.
That's what he gave up.
Right. Right.
So that's what it was, like, as much as anything. So you're right, but he has to manage in a way that says, I have, whatever they have left, 86 games, and I don't have my starters back until July.
Right. And they're playing tonight against the Nationals. I mean, there's no break here, right? You know, it's Mackenzie Gore, Clayton Kershaw tonight. And so, yeah, no, I agree there. It's just interesting. Kevin, you and I talked and have been texting all week about what a just bonkers series this was. All things considered, looking back at the seven games the Padres have played against the Dodgers in the last week, sort of how did they do relative to your expectations? And sort of what sort of a grade would we give them for going, what was it, 2-5 against the Dodgers?
Yeah. I'm so used to them getting beat by the Dodgers, and I don't mean that glibly or anything, and I realize they won the season series last year. But, you know, like, they got crushed in the season series in 22 and won in the division series. They won the season series last year and got beat in the division series. Like, I'm just, like, the Dodgers are better, man. The Dodgers stars are better than the Padres stars, and the Dodgers depth is exponentially better than the Padres depth. And, like, they're not even close at this point. Now, that doesn't – this is baseball. So the beauty of that is you could have a 2022 situation. Now, you want to go bigger picture. I don't know that the Padres have the pitching. And that means, look, impressed as heck. I want to make sure as I clear, as I pound on their pitching, I am so impressed by Stephen Kolek, Ryan Burgert, and even Randy Vasquez. I'm talking about a – playoff rotation. I'm talking about a World Series rotation. When I say, I just don't know that the Padres have the pitching to be able to do this. But of course, the Dodgers didn't have the pitching last year. They had injuries last year and they won the World Series. But again, that goes back to your point. They have the offense. So something's got to come through for the Padres to have a chance in the playoffs this year, or even making the playoffs this year. This team, as it is right now, is just not all that good. It's not. Right. Now, I just said, as it is right now, I don't know what you think. I know you watch every game. Like, as it is right now, with Xander Bogaerts being, before the last couple days, being that guy, with Tatis being up and down, with Luis Arraez batting .280, and not doing anything else as besides getting singles and some occasional extra base hits. And with the catchers doing what they're doing, I don't know if I can say left fielder anymore because Gavin Sheets is playing out there every day. But with the lack of the depth in their lineup, this is not a very good team. And when I say very good, could it still be the sixth playoff team? Sure. But it's not. They've got, everybody has got to play better.
I have a controversial thought. I'd be curious to see what you think of this. If we find out this afternoon that Fernando Tatis is out for 2 months, that this is a, you know, small fracture in his hand, but hey, you know, you're going to have to cast him. All of a sudden, this means that at least until Jackson Merrill returns, the Padres have an outfield of, a 4A outfield, right? If Fernando Tatis is out for 2 months or whatever it would be, 6 weeks, do you think the Padres should consider selling? To me, that sure seems like the sign from above that maybe this isn't going to be your year. Looks like we've lost Kevin. To me, one of the, you know, if Fernando Tatis is out indefinitely or if he's out for 6 weeks, you know, all of a sudden, I think we're looking at a really difficult situation for them. Don't you think, Kevin?
Have me, Ryan, and I apologize for
all good.
This was always going to be this is always going to be a crapshoot here as I go down the 15. I don't think you're crazy. I don't think you're crazy. I think that we'd be a little early to be officially talking about that. But look, like, you couple it with what I said and what you said. What I said, I don't know how far this particular team is going. Mm-hmm. Like playing like they are, and then you talking about being out with one of the guys who needs to perform, I don't think you're crazy to say, is this organization better served long-term, you know, unloading some salary, getting some players, some younger players back, replenishing a farm system, however you want to look at it. I don't think you're crazy. I think it's a little early, but that's kind of what we're here for, is to talk big picture, right?
Right. And I do need to remind myself, Kevin, last year, even heading into the All-Star break, this was not a team that looked like a playoff team on paper. To me, at least. And then they went and they had, you know, one of the best second halves in the history of their franchise.
What's right? Funny is that, just a little inside journalism. I'm not sure anybody cares. Some people seem to be interested in it. Every single story during this series was ripped up. and did not make like the internet, right? Like because of what happened in the games. But last night's story originally dove into this topic to some extent. And it talked about, yes, at this time last year, and the Padres right now are 40 and 34, that's 74 games. Last year, they were 37 and 37. They would end up going to 37 and 40. So they were three under, three games from now. Then were one game over at the All-Star break, lost the first game after the All-Star break. And so I think at like 102 games were 500. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yes, that's true. But Jackson Merrill got like scorching hot. Manny Machado remained scorching hot. They had a better bench. They had a healthy Michael King, had a Dylan Cease that justified the belief in him. Like there were just things that were different. Mm-hmm. That team also was never 14 and 3.
Right.
So like this team is now playing at a like 4-11 pace over the last 40 games. At that rate, I think this did make the final story because I just didn't tear it, didn't throw it all away, just threw 90% of it away. Mm-hmm. At that rate, they'll be under 500 by the All-Star break.
Right.
That's if they were to keep going. Now, look, another point that I made was that this gauntlet that we just all talked about, and that's why I always like kind of roll my eyes at myself and everybody else when we make a big deal about 14 games, whatever it was at the beginning of June, that if they don't go how you thought or whatever, well, then the next 14 or 17 games are the huge ones, right? And so that's where we're at right now. You got to win the series against the Royals. You got to win the series against the Nationals. You got to win the series against the Reds. And then you go to Philly. And that's how you turn this and go, okay, now we're good. That's just what you got to do now, right? You don't play the Dodgers. You play the Diamondbacks in the two homestands from now. You don't play the Dodgers again until August. You don't play the Giants again until August. You got to just, you know, beat who you're playing now.
It is funny. If there's anything that I think last night might do would be galvanize, and not players. You know, I think so much of this is overblown about players getting fired up after stuff. But this might galvanize maybe fans, skeptical fans, people at Petco Park to rally a little bit around a club that really needs to play a good week or two of baseball, right? It's they're playing, I mean, you know, this may be a really loud series against the Kansas City Royals because of what's happened the last couple nights in Los Angeles. Coming up, you've got the Washington Nationals, right? One of the worst teams in baseball, losers of 11 straight before yesterday. You know, maybe there's a little bit of a rallying cry here because of what's gone on against the Dodgers. I think this much is clear. The Padres need to play really good baseball here the next 10 days or so, so they can fall into that buyer's camp instead of a seller's camp.
And it's interesting, too. I agree with you. And I just, you know, something that I was talking about before and would be talking about more if they were firm buyers, which, by the way, they are. That's what they're putting out. That they're buyers, but like not a lot out there. Now, I'm not trying to downplay what AJ Preller is capable of, but there's not a lot out there. Like they're not getting Juan Soto, right? Which, by the way, wasn't that great of a help anyway. Last year's trade deadline was the best one they've had, in my opinion, bringing in all those relievers and Martin Perez, who, by the way, the Padres won 8 of his 10 starts. You know, that was a fantastic trade deadline. They needed that in the bullpen. I don't know that they need that now. I know the bullpen by some metrics has been shaky, and the bullpen by a lot of metrics has been phenomenal this year. So I agree with you. I would think that the reaction tonight, especially if Tatis plays, will be off the charts. And I agree with you that the Padres really need to play well. And they do have some players that are playing well. And what Xander Bogaerts did the last couple of days, I'll just, you know, reiterate what I tell fans, because the number one, including today, people still saying Xander sucks, just got to remind me, I guess, you know, in case they thought that maybe I'd lose focus because, you know, he had a good night or something, is you're right. This is a big situation. This is a huge problem for the Padres. All this money that he's owed, and he's not the player that, you know, he was. And that continues. You're right. But for this year's team, all you can hope is that the last two nights were real. That's all. Yeah. If you're a Padres fan, you're all you can hope is that that Xander Bogaerts finishes strong, which he has the last 2 years. That's all you've got going for you this year. Unless they are going to become gigantic sellers and somehow package him with Ethan Salas and Adrian Morahone to get rid of his salary or something. I don't know. But like, that's not what you want to be thinking right now. So stop thinking about what you're going to do about Xander's contract in the future. And, you know, if you're a fan, just start hoping that he hits better.
Right. Right. I'm reminded, you know what last night reminded me of a little bit, Kevin? It was last year's dust up with the Nationals. When Washington was visiting Petco Park, remember, with Profar and Mackenzie Gore, the Machado hits the home run first pitch. And from that night on, I think they lost something like five games over the next 6 weeks. It was that sort of really kickstarted that great second half of theirs. Not saying that was why, but it will be interesting to see, I think, sort of which team shows up tonight and whether Fernando Tatis Jr. is in the lineup. Padres Royals, it's a 3-game series. Real quick, going to go over the pitching. Nick Pivetta and Michael Lorenzen tonight, 6:40 on Apple TV. Pivetta 7-2, the ace of the staff. Michael Lorenzen 4-7 with an ERA just a hair under 5, but he's been good, at least lately. You know, certainly talk about fighting. I don't think there's anybody you'd want to fight less on the mound than Michael Lorenzen, the big, strong guy. You've got Cameron versus Cease coming up here Saturday, 4:15 on Fox. You know, Dylan Cease, again, has lowered that ERA, 4.6 now, but still needs to, sort of string some good starts together. The Padres hope to have a chance. And then, old friend Seth Lugo, who's just been great ever since he signed with the Royals at the beginning of last year. He's 4-5 with an ERA under 5, or with an ERA just around 3. He's facing Randy Vasquez on Sunday, 3-4 with an ERA of 3.70. So those are the Kansas City Royals. I don't know a ton about them outside of Bobby Witt Jr.
They got the new prospect. Is it Castiglione? He's hitting home runs.
Castiglione? Yeah, Jack.
Yeah. I'm sorry, guys. I think I could be excused. I've been really busy with this Padres-Dodgers thing. I have not looked at the Royals other than they don't hit home runs. They're the only team that gets fewer runs from the home runs than the Padres, though this kid's hitting a little, and they do have some guys with pop. Of course they're going to come in, and both these teams are just going to be hitting home runs all over the place. But, yeah, they are a dangerous team. That could come in here and absolutely ruin the Padres weekend and perhaps, make us talking next podcast about the stuff that we talked about this podcast about the future.
Yep. Bobby Witt Jr., Michael Garcia, they hit second and third for them. 830 and 865 OPSs respectively. Two pretty good players near the top of that order. They've already posted their lineup for tonight. The Padres have not. Kevin, I always put you on the spot, and gosh, I was thinking this morning of what sort of thing I could ask and make you squirm a little, and I came up with this. You were in the press conference the night of the famous "We're Coming" speech from Andy Green. You were in the press conference last night with Mike Shildt. Compare and contrast those two guys, and who do you think gave the better post-game speech, Andy Green or Mike Shildt?
Well, I got to say, last night was one of Mike's best. It wasn't over the top. It wasn't trying too hard. It was, he loves his guys. That's one thing that you're not ever going to ever dispute. I thought that was one of Andy Green's shining moments. I really did. Because Andy Green didn't have a whole lot to work with.
Right. And he acknowledged as much in the speech. He goes, it's not going to be this year. It's not going to be next year. But down the road, we're coming. Right?
Yep. Yeah. Yep. Yeah, and so I thought, there's a soft spot I have for Andy Green because of, I think people had expectations of this guy as if he wasn't running Corey Spangenberg and Carlos Asuaje out there every night. And not by his choice, by the way. I do have a soft spot there. I will say this, Mike really, like I said, man, and I try to be really fair, and I thought that there have been times when Mike has been over the top. I struggle to find what Mike did wrong last night, and I absolutely believe that his press conference last night had some moments that could live forever if the Padres have a big season. some of the words, the enough is enough, and not cool, man. And, you know, I really feel like he did a good job last night.
Yeah, I thought it was even-handed. I mean, even at some point they go, well, are you surprised that they tossed Suarez? He's like, no. Yeah. Like, you know, this was not somebody trying to recast what had just happened in a Padres light. I thought that he did a really good job of explaining where he came from, what surprised him. And then to actually step back and say, well, yeah, of course. Yeah, of course they tossed our guy.
And to talk about how his teams, and he takes a lot of pride in this. Remember, he explained it to, gosh darn it, was it Johnson, the umpire in New York? He explained how many of his guys have been thrown out. He takes a lot of pride in being, you know, having a class roster and not throwing at guys. But I thought one of his better moments was his dissertation on how they will play old school baseball if you want them to play old school baseball. And by that, he's basically saying, we will come after you.
Right. By the way, breaking news here, the Dodgers just optioned Jack Little back to the minors. So they're on their 34th pitcher here in June. Look, the Dodgers
are remarkable. It's remarkable what they are doing. Now, I will say I'm not as impressed as I would be by any of the other 29 teams doing it, because, I mean, first off, let me say this. They obviously draft and develop really well. But they have also rotated in some incredible pitchers that are, making some pretty decent money.
Yep. The Dodgers practically invented sending a guy down the day after he pitches, too. I mean, that's
right. They changed the rules, basically. But now they have the depth with which to be able to still do it, even though a guy's got to stay down for 10 days.
Right. So anyway, so they probably sent Jack Little down because, his control issues, right? that's probably it. Anyway. Padres, Royals, 3-game series starting tonight. Obviously, visit us at San Diego Union Tribune's website. We will get the Fernando Tatis injury news to you guys as soon as we possibly have it. Be following us all weekend. And Kevin, I hope that you can get some sleep at some point, maybe during the All-Star break. How about that?
Yeah, looking forward to it.
Excellent. All right, man. That'll do it for this episode of the Hot Lava Podcast. For Kevin Acey, I'm Ryan Finley. We'll see you next time.